thank you very much, Sarah and Ted, for allowing me to do this. I was wondering what January 3rd would look like in terms of Westminster attendance. And the one thing that we were joking about back here is that this is probably the first time that the choir won't get up and leave, right? So Jackie and Peg worked together to get all of that information finally memorialized into the books of the corporation. And I wanted to show you what the books look like. They're called registers and minute books, and these are the most recent ones because, Jackie, I stole them just for a little bit just to show everybody. But in them, at any particular time, you can see the lists of the new communicants, which is what I've opened it to right now, the lists of all of the active members. And we have this, of course, would include the addition of the new communicants classes when they join the church as well. So it's all here, and it's all in a historical format. And we have one that has to deal with, it deals with the ministers that have served Westminster. That's not a very big section, as a matter of fact, but it's nevertheless a section that is out there. And then there's the minute book. The minute book is just like you would imagine minutes to be. Each and every session meeting is it's the clerk's responsibility to record the minutes of what went on in the actual meeting. So they are page after page of the history of the session's work. And of course they're there to double check to make sure that that we've done everything we're supposed to do in the course of a year. These are the minutes that reflect the decisions that session makes as our leaders at any particular time. So these are always available. We should be, and they actually have always been available here by either they're here actually in the church. This will probably change a little bit in the future, but the actual books, but the upon request, the clerk and the people that work with the clerk would be able to answer any questions that anybody have. Then what they would use in doing that are these records that are kept. So what happens at Westminster? Well, we meet, the session meets, routinely we'll meet 10 times a year. We don't do the full monthly regimen because we don't meet normally during June or July and August. But most all, every other time we do meet, there's at least one regular meeting. It's usually on a Monday. It's the third Monday of every month. Routinely, that's when it's set up. And what happens in that meeting is one of the first things that happens in that meeting is that all of these historical records, that includes, I didn't say earlier, transfers, members that are transferring in, transferring out, all of that, weddings, baptisms, deaths, all of that is memorialized and put into the records here at this point in time. They're in the minutes, they're in the actual registers themselves. So that's the kind of the initial process that's really involved. The clerk is also responsible to preserve the records of the church. Well, I think, you know, it's really been kind of funny to a lot of you folks that I look out there and see. You've been in this church so long, and you know all the actors and the players over all of the years. And we think, well, gee, we haven't really been around that long, but we got to start counting the years, and you realize there is a quite impressive history that has accumulated since Westminster actually started. I was surprised to see that the presbytery last February, without telling the clerks, right, actually published a new handbook for the clerks to follow, do's and don'ts, that kind of things, what you should be doing, what you shouldn't be doing. But I was really surprised that, as you might expect in the world we live in, The very strong impression is given that what we should be doing with these books is, their preference within PCUSA, is that we scan all of these records, make them electronic, use those as our working records, and have these books transferred to the storage site that they recommend is in Philadelphia, unfortunately. But it's one of these archival units where the records are kept hermetically sealed and all of that kind of good stuff. Always retrievable, by the way. It's not like they go there and never come back. They can always be retrieved. But everything is moving in that electronic, to that electronic era type of a thing that we all live in. So I think one of the things that I will try to be doing in this next year is perhaps getting some money from the endowment fund probably to do this project, to get all of these records scanned, and then we can work with the records both scanned and in their original format. The thing that would be tragic, truly tragic in all of this would be, and the situation as we have it right now is, albeit that it is a file cabinet that is marked fireproof, who knows, you know, what would happen, you know, to the records if they are kept here on site. And many years ago, I think there was a better chance that they would have survived because there was a huge vault in the, may still be there, down in the old section of the church, but it was a section that was had a lot of water damage in it. And I think the fear was that, yes, the records would be great in the vault, but they might be very moldy and not usable if they were kept down there. So they've been moved upstairs. Probably not a good idea to keep the situation as it is right now, because if there were a fire in that wing of the building, the old wing of the building, then the records could possibly be lost. So it's one of those, I think that that's one of the things we probably want to look at here at Westminster doing in the near future. Now, there are more people than just Jackie and Peg that are involved, too. Craig Johnson has been involved as well as being an assistant, and I probably haven't done the best in this area than I should have done. I kind of picked this ball up when it was rolling pretty fast and started to run with it, but all of the hands, they're more than just two hands that are necessary really to do something right, and I can't thank the people enough that work with these. Dave Ryder is another one that works, you know, here being at the church when needed on the books or getting the books or transferring the books, doing these types of things. And I can't thank them enough for the job that they do to make my job a little bit easier. Now, one of the jobs that I have to do is I have to take these books and records annually and have them reviewed by another person, by persons at the presbytery. There's a review process that's handled two or three times a year. What they actually do is they announce that you can take your books and records to such and such a church. And what they do is they convene many of the clerks, and what we do is exchange the records. And I review somebody else's records, and they review my records, our records, to see whether or not we are doing things the way the presbytery wants them done, among other people at the presbytery, and that's a good thing. I think it's a good thing, because what it does is it gets a kind of a uniformity, and keeps some level of uniformity going as you work through these things. So, what does the clerk do? The clerk records the transactions of the session, and it keeps it's responsible. The clerk is responsible for preservation of the records and providing any information from those records that somebody could want. So that kind of, now that's pretty much what this says the clerk does. Okay, at this point in time, That's about all it says, you know, about it. It's really an open, kind of a flexible kind of an arrangement that can be had. So what does the clerk at Westminster do? Well, I keep not only the minutes of the of each session meeting, and those would be regular session meetings, and we can have at any particular time special meetings called for some particular reason. So special meetings that are special but not, you know, out of the ordinary are like the new communicants classes. When we receive those folks into membership, that's usually done. That has to be done by an action of session. So usually that is within the meeting minutes of a particular year. You'll find a couple special meeting minutes that deal with two classes, where we have usually two classes of young communicants that join us in any particular year. We have the congregational meeting that occurs has to occur at least once a year by the Book of Order. And we usually do that at the end of January, and the clerk of session is the secretary of that proceeding, tasked with keeping the minutes and publishing the minutes of the congregational meeting as well. So that pretty much is the meeting minutes side of what one does as a clerk over the period of a year. There is an annual review or statistical report that actually goes to presbytery. And really what that is the presbytery requires, and this actually, we all know how the system works as Presbyterians. The first level of governance is a council called the session of the church. And then there is the presbytery, is the next level of governance. And usually it's up to 10, at least 10 churches form a presbytery at any particular time. And then you have the General Assembly is at the top. The Synod is in the middle. I knew there were four. The Synod is in the third position above the presbyteries, and then the General Assembly is at the top of the list. So that's the level of, and each one of those has a council, okay? So, and each one is governed by a different set of rules, but we at the church level here are responsible for the rules that are set forth in the Book of Order. And these are the ones that we operate by. So what happens is that in the normal course of every year, the statistical reports are due from each and every congregation. What is the makeup of your congregation in terms of ethnic makeup, age, all the rest of those kinds of issues? Female, male, it's broken down in all of these kinds of categories. And so there's a big report that Dave Ryder helps me put together that actually is submitted to presbytery every year. And each church is required to actually do that. And this is the information, by the way, that is fed up the system. That's how you get to those magnificent numbers that Jim preaches about from the pulpit. Those are the General Assembly numbers, right? You know, and they come as a result of churches and presbyteries and synods all moving the information up the chain to one grand set of numbers that deal with the Presbyterianism at the present time. So that's another matter that the clerk of session has the responsibility of making sure happens, is that the statistical report goes in every year. And then there's this funny thing that I'm not sure how this is going to come across to some of you folks, but buried in here is the requirement that any church that is in a jurisdiction, here comes the lawyer stuff, okay, that will allow it, is supposed to have and must have a corporate existence. So as you might expect, there is a Westminster Presbyterian Church, Inc. out there, incorporated in the corporate records of Pennsylvania. The clerk is, again, responsible for those books and records to make sure that the corporation's books are kept in a fashion that maintains the corporate existence. What does that mean? It means that if you don't do that, you don't have a right to defend yourself in court. So it would be a good thing, you know, if we keep the corporation books in order and follow the rules and regulations that deal with corporate existence in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. So again, there's a deference in another set of books that is subject to being monitored and meetings held to do that. Now, who would be the people at Westminster that are the corporation? We've got the head of staff, the minister, but who's the corporation? The corporation is our session members. I hope this isn't going to be confusing to you, but I'll give it a shot. In the Book of Order, the session members are also referred to as trustees. So depending upon size of a church, whether one's a small church or a large church with few resources or lots of resources, the flexibility is there that it's, in essence, these trustees, which are your session members, are picked from those trustees as picked your corporation officers. The trustees, in another way, would be, in a corporate setting, would be the directors, right? In any corporate situation, you have directors and officers. So the directors would be the trustees or the members of session, and then the officers would be delegated that responsibility by the session, by a vote within the session. So each year what we do is we elect a president of the corporation, and Mr. Shortridge did that job for many, many years back there, I remember. And Carolyn over here has been doing it most recently for us. So, and Session will have to, because Carolyn is not going to be there, is going to have to, long term, we're going to have to re-vote and obtain new officers for the corporation. So all of that's just another function that one has to be occur in the course of a year, is to make sure that the corporation is doing all those good things it's supposed to do, and to keep its corporate existence. And I think that that's kind of important. You say, well, what do we at Westminster need a corporation for? And I think that if you start to think about that beautiful nursery school and daycare center downstairs, which is a pretty big operation, business operation, when you see and figure out its all of its working parts down there, when you think of all of the things that Westminster is involved in outreach and things like that, the need for, in this world, unfortunately, a corporate existence isn't a bad thing to have in place, and that is another reason why it's there, and why I think when you get to a book that it's this by the way, comes from General Assembly, right? It has to be voted upon and passed by General Assembly. So it would be behoove any church to have a corporate existence as well. So it's not, as I read it, an absolute, but it's the idea that you wouldn't have one is kind of, in today's world, is kind of hard to stomach as that goes on. So the clerk usually is the secretary of that corporation, simply because, guess what? Clerk gets to hold the books, and secretaries are normally the people that hold the books and make sure and are responsible for the books themselves. Another job of the clerk here this is one that I kind of particularly enjoy, and Jim kind of gave me this smile and said, well, I tell you what, Brian, I think you are kind of, we're just going to call you a delegate or a member at large of every commission of the session. And I thought, wow, that's pretty cool. You know, and he said, you can go wherever you want in terms of meetings for the, in the commission. So although I don't profess to have all that time, much time yet to be doing those kinds of things, going to everybody's commission meetings and sticking my nose into everybody's missions at the commission level, I have the and have used that opportunity to at least dabble in some of the other commissions as they work through these issues that are of importance to the church. And I wanted to just bring up a couple of them that have come up just very, very recently. But I think, and I went to their commission meetings just to stay involved in the process. We had noticed that one of the things that, again, the clerk seems to fall back on the clerk, according to Pittsburgh Presbytery anyway, is that the clerk is to make sure that the church is adequately insured. And we had an instance a couple years ago. It's almost like 2 years ago, I want to say, that this started. But we had a call that came from Kathy Long over at the Rock. And she said, I have this problem. And there's a problem, Houston, type of a thing. And I said, well, what's that? And she said, well, there's a bunch of guys that show up and want to play basketball in the basketball league that we have here at Westminster in the Rock. And you gave us this form that said, well, fill out, you know, your health insurance, you know, information, whether you're covered by, you have your own health insurance. And a bunch of guys that want to play basketball but refuse to give me that information. What should I do? Type of a thing. And I started to think about insurance issues. And I said first to her, well, they can't play. They just have to leave unless they're going to give you that information or sign a waiver. And the problem was resolved that way. But what this incident showed was that we had been in a situation where we had an insurance policy. And you can imagine what that policy must look like. If you need a hint on this, the policy that the two policies that I have, one from the prior insurer and the new one, each is over 300 pages long. Really hard to find with that little bit of information that you really need to know. But what we had done is what had happened in the insurance industry is that we thought we were covered with insurance for an incident where, say, a fellow would break an ankle or something like that playing basketball. But we had missed the fact, or we were never given the information one way or the other, that our insurer had dropped that coverage out of our policy by just giving us a notice that said, oh, by the way, you're no longer covered for this. So we had been going along for a year or two there, not knowing that we were not covered, still, you know, using our outreach mentality to reach out to people, but finding that we were kind of putting ourselves really at risk type of a situation. Well, when we got into it, we realized that there was quite a bit that needed to be done, and it took... what we did is the... Doug, I think, was involved in this at one point in time, you know, helping us get through this thing. As we worked through the... rebidding the insurance altogether. It took about 18 months for this process to get done and to rebid the insurance and get a new insurance policy in place that had the coverage that had to be done, because there were separate insurers that were still providing the coverage for things like the Rock and Rock activities and things like that, but we weren't insured at the point. So insurance is another kind of one of those things that's below this, kind of below the radar screen that is always out there that one is worried about or should keep involved. You have a question, Art?
Is the insurance of the corporation?
We're going to get into a lot of detail if we do this, but it's a very good question. His question is the insurance in the corporation? Is it who's insured? And As a lawyer, unfortunately, I'm going to tell you the bad part. You know, if you were to be sued, no matter what's the first thing that's out there, the deep pocket is also going to be sued. But the question becomes one of legal entanglements. But so you want to do the best that you possibly could do in this situation. And so the church right now has a policy. The new policy is with Westminster Presbyterian Church, Inc., the corporation, okay? And but the issues that we were coming up with is the session had become aware of the fact in the last year or so that with just the way that the nursery school and the daycare facility downstairs has changed over the years, would it not be a good idea, perhaps, to have an entity out there that the nursery school and daycare center were operating under their own kind of a corporate structure? So what we just finished doing in this last year is we formed an LLC, a limited liability corporation company, that is called, it has an acronym, I'm sorry, WESEP, and that's Westminster Educational Child Something Center. It's WESEP is the shortened version of the whole thing, but what it has is a situation, now it has its own board of directors, it has its own meetings, separate meetings. It is, basically it works is that the Child Development Center, WESEP, works, and then they pay their bills. We pay many of their bills, but they pay some bill their bills. And then whatever's left over actually comes back to the church at the end of a particular year, and because we are actually operating as a nonprofit. And so what does come back, it does come back, and it's kept for them. And it's basically a kind of a floating account balance that they basically have. But that's how we've decided that we wanted to make it a little bit more clear to those folks that were contracting with a group of folks that were not necessarily all Westminster people, a business operation, that they were dealing with WESEP LLC, not Westminster, you know, the big daddy type of a situation. So that has a legal context to it. And the intent is to make sure that people understand that there's business within a business type of a situation. And it's a limitation of liability type of an issue. But that's the kind of the situation. Then what you have to make sure happens is that the insurance interchanges or actually it connects directly with the whole thing. Make sure that you have the coverage within the insurance for the entities that have been listed. So that's all in this big process that we've been actually going through to put that kind of a situation in place. We also formed in this last year, you're talking about a business within a business type of a situation. A publishing company, and Carolyn, I'm forgetting the name of it at the present time, but it's another LLC. And at the risk of blowing the name, I won't say it, unless you want to say it.
WCP Press.
No, that's good. WCPC Press. Okay. It's an LLC. And the point, you'll remember the books that have been coming out recently that Jim has authored, Jim Gilchrist has authored. And there's a book that came out that's a child's book who were the authors of that? Beth was involved and Sandy Conley, yeah. So there's another little book, but that's also to be kept and that all has its nonprofit. It's all set up as an LLC nonprofit. Everybody thought this was they thought I was kind of weird when I went out and started to form these things, because they said, how could you have an LLC that is nonprofit? And I didn't figure this out for myself. Don't give me credit for that. I called Harrisburg and figured it out. that there is such a thing, and set them up those ways. So these are nonprofits, the way they're set up, not meant to be, you know, their own entire little niche. But for, say, the Westminster Press, there was some seed money that was necessary to get the whole operation started, to get the books published. And so the corporation actually, and the session, through the session and the corporation, actually gave the money to the press to get started. But any of the excess that's left over is, again, within an account there, but here within the church for their benefit. But it's a business intended to run as a separate business in and of itself and the great thing about LLCs, you say, why are you using these LLCs, is that you can take the profit, the net profit that comes off of them, and it's just another schedule on the big tax return if one is due, okay? So the corporation publishes, it has its own tax return, and it's just another schedule for the LLC, for the press, Westminster Press, or for WESEP LLC. But again, we're getting more complex in actually what we do here, and we're trying to make sure in all of that we are availing ourselves of any and all options that we have legally to protect Westminster and ourselves from those in those operations as we go. So that's a kind of an interesting part of the job, is to be able to go to all these other commissions. I've had the chance to deal with property on the insurance commission on the insurance issue. I love to go to the worship commission meetings just to figure out what's going to go on next at Westminster. Many times it's I will be sitting in the choir or somebody, and I'm supposed to have the answer to that. So the easiest way to do that was just to go to the meetings and keep some notes. Possibly that would help in the whole situation. So I do that as well. I do the personnel meetings as well. I go to the personnel commission meetings as well. Did you have a question?
Who's your auditor?
That was the next thing that was coming up. One of the things that we're supposed to do as a church every year is to have our books audited. I could probably turn around and, you see, the thing that's always the trick question here is the answer's right there, as to who the name of that auditor is. So after the meeting, if you want, I can actually give them their names. But every year, our books are reviewed / audited. I think really what we do is we have a review process that, and then the audit occurs like every other year or something like that. It's not every year that we do a full-blown audit. But we do have, the books are actually audited. That's another responsibility of the session and the clerk to remind the session that we're supposed to be doing that. And so the books are audited on a regular basis as well. So that's the financial commission, the finance commission, that it has that responsibility in the course of the year, along with the budget. So the budget is another one of those big ticket issues, you know, when you take a look at really where you're going as a church and what the requirements for the year going forward are going to be. What are the legal issues? What else do we need to know and try to be thinking about as we do these, as we expand really what we do as a church in the community? So that's another thing that we actually do that I actually have fun doing is I figured if Jim would give me the permission, I would take it as far as I could go, and it's worked pretty well. I mean, Doug didn't throw me out out of any of the meetings, so it's worked well. There are some other things that are lesser tasks. One of the things that I'm supposed to do is keep track of office and help with officer training. What that means is we will have next Saturday a training session for new session members, elders and deacons. And you probably are aware that usually it's that next Sunday that they all will be ordained. So that will be coming up in the this next week. But we have a half-day training session where we bring everybody to the worship or to the fellowship hall, and we sort of get those that have not been elders before or deacons before kind of acclimated to what it is their responsibilities are, where the information is can be found, and get them in ready and going quickly in the year. So officer training is one of the things that we do. We talked earlier about the election of the trustees for the corporation. At least the one thing that we have to do on a should be doing on a regular basis is having an annual meeting of the corporation. Now, these are all things, as I said earlier, that are kind of all of the support parts, many of the support parts that make the big plane fly. And it is really an honor to be able to be picked to try to fill this role, and I really feel that it is an honor to do it. I enjoy it. I guess it's because of what I've done for very much for so many years. And the neat thing about it is that nobody's fighting particularly about it, which is a change from what I do as an attorney or have done as an attorney over the years. So that's pretty much the role of clerk. The one thing I had intended to say earlier in the beginning was that I'm perfectly willing to talk about anything about all of these roles and duties in relationship to what's happening at Westminster today that maybe you folks know about or have a question about that touches on any of these kinds of areas. So if there's time left and anybody has a question about what I've spoken about as that which a clerk does and where we are going at Westminster, we can certainly talk about that. Does anybody have any questions? Sandy. Yeah.
So insurance and all of that's all covered. We're just giving them space or renting space?
That was the term I would use is outsourced. We actually moved to outsourcing that because we just couldn't seem to continue to handle the dynamics of another business type of operation, which that actually is. And they carry their own insurance. The answer to that is that it's part and parcel to all of that. They carry the insurance on them on their providers, so it's part of it's a big corporation in and of itself. And so, I think looking at the insurance policy, we didn't have anything. There may be something in there that deals with some kind of maybe umbrella coverages. What happens with church policies is that it seems to me when I take a look at an insurance policy like this is that you have primary and secondary insurance issues. So who's going to be the first up in terms of an issue of insurance? And then who's got to have blanket kind of insurance like a shopping center owner would have, okay, on the shopping center, like Simon Properties has on South Hills Village, you know, that kind of a thing. So there's an umbrella always, and then there's the primary that is the initial target in any kind of a dispute. So, but the primary insurance for sure is part and parcel to the counseling center group that are in there. So, yes.
Are the volunteers covered?
Yes. The answer, yes. Yes. That's one thing that's kind of unique about a church policy is that the volunteers are covered. So there's a very clear section of the insurance policy that deals with the volunteers, the work of volunteers. I mean, it's just the questions that you get as the clerk are just amazing. There was a question that came in came to me about 6 months ago, and it had to do with the coffee in the North Wing. And essentially, apparently, what had happened is the beautiful array of cookies and treats were laid out there with the coffee, and a young child came racing down the hallway from class and grabbed something off of a plate, which the parent who was following started to, I guess it wasn't nice, let's put it this way, shriek about the, how could you put things, the child had a peanut allergy. And so what happened was we had a person that was was taking care of the kitchen downstairs in the fellowship hall. And this person was on his way out, actually sort of said to those that were gathered right there, you know, you all have personal responsibility for that. And so the question that came to the clerk was, is that true? You know, type of a situation. And unfortunately, it is. You know, there's some stuff out there, you know, about the fact that offering a child with a peanut allergy something that made him or her sick leaves not only the church, but the person who cooked it in trouble, personally. The state of the law is another presentation, reflection at some point in time. But that was a bad type of a situation that actually these things kind of occur. John.
Does the church have archives that would go beyond the official records and corporate records? So let's say a historian wanted to write the history of Westminster. This would be kind of metadata, I guess.
There are archives. I know that my mother was part of that, you know, at some point in time. I don't know where they are resident at this point in time, whether they're actually here in the church, but there is a treasure trove of, you know, when the new cornfield came out, I think the last time that they really dove into all of that information to put that all together, or to use some of that information in putting together the new cornfield campaign. But there's a wonderful treasure trove of information about all the stuff that has occurred over all these years. And that's over and apart from these records. It's not, that kind of information wouldn't be in there. Heather, did you have a question? There you go. But I saw some of the data. I mean, it's really great.
A showcase.
Yeah, in 231.
It gets changed from time to time. But I believe when Frazier's the person, the current chair of all that stuff.
Yeah. There's I think in room 231, you actually see the mortgage, the picture of them burning the mortgage on the first church. That's that kind of stuff that's actually available. But it's, and you know, that's always a, you know, maybe a thing that we should think about as well. Is, you know, that's where do we how far do we go in protecting that information? You know, when it's all said and done, because I mean, it is after all our history that we have here. So, Sarah. You know, that's really good. You know, and I missed that one. That's another one of those duties that I'm supposed to have. Is I'm supposed to be, along with Jim, who's the moderator. The moderator is normally Jim. He can be there, or it could be Tammy. It could be whoever is chosen to be the moderator. But the person that is supposed to be the parliamentarian behind there is supposed to, you know, just jump in there when it gets to that point in time and and use the latest version of Robert's Rules of Order to straighten it out and to get a vote to table it to whatever needs to be done to, you know, at the pleasure of session. So again, one of the things that I carry to each session meeting is the latest version of Robert's Rules of Order. And but I have not had to use them, which is a good thing, a really good thing. I've never had to pull them out, and because we've never the sessions, most recent sessions have been very cooperative, and there's I think a lot of that goes to the credit goes to the moderator, the way a meeting is run. So if you never get to the having to vote, you know, on a thumbs up, thumbs down type of a situation, and you can work it out, that's the best, always the best solution. And we've done, as a group, very, very well over the last years in not having to get nasty with one another. We just work things out as best we can. Yes.
So membership trends are a hot topic among a number of religions and churches these days. How do we define an active member here at Westminster?
Yeah, we have a kind of an ongoing conversation about what constitutes an active member. I think the way Jim puts it, and I think it's very, very clear, you know, if you think about it in this context. We have lots and lots of folks going through our 131 doors and coming into the church, whatever that number is. Lots of doors in the church, okay? And the issue, though, that really comes down to membership is that how in the modern era folks define them, they're active, whether they're active. And Jim's said this many times, and it's my feeling as well, that many of our new members feel that they are active. They feel that they are really active if they're here two times a month, maybe one time a month. And I don't think the rest of us, particularly pretty much everybody that's sitting in this room, would use that definition, honestly, as to what constitutes active membership. So presence and attendance is one issue, okay? The other is actual involvement in the commissions, being on session, and the rest of that. Now, I will say, as far as session is concerned, there has been a very, very strong push to have the session represent a cross section of the church. So we have had in the past years the session, if you were to take a look at it in terms of all 27 members, you will find that surprisingly, there is a good representation of male and female, equal, pretty much equal along those lines. And then the stratification started to occur where we have had a very strong directive to try to pull these people, younger generation, into the activities of the church, whether that be as deacons or elders. And that has been a good thing that has actually occurred. So active membership has, for me, a couple of different types of situations involved. Unfortunately, when you take a look at, say, a budget issue, what we're looking at is for every person that leaves, that dies in our congregation, by and large, and this is a generalization, this isn't, fact for fact, but it basically looks like it takes four of these new young families coming into the church to replace one that we lose from the register. In terms of cash, in all honesty, that's kind of where we are, in the whole thing. So you have, You can measure things, try to measure things in terms of energy and commitment to causes, or cash, you know, to do the things that we do and the things that we dream of doing. But this is all kind of a flux at this point in time as to, you know, how we accomplish what we set out, you know, and to try to do. So, did that answer your question? Okay, John.
In about the 2 or 3 minutes that are left.
Good. I needed that.
Did you say anything in sort of the spirit of a state of the union, where we are, how we stand?
Sure. I mean, you know, that's the funny thing. I try to kind of keep working this thing when Jim asks everybody to stand up in a. What we do normally with the new members is that we ask them to come for the first part of a session meeting, and we sit and talk among ourselves and introduce ourselves to one another and get to know each other a little bit, and then the session takes the formal approval of welcoming them as new members. And so I stand up in front of the group and I keep saying to folks, well, you know, I'm a little different than Sandy. Sandy's got me on just sheer number of years of membership here. She's got me. But I came back to Pittsburgh in 1967 for my senior year of high school. At Upper St. Clair, my dad had been killed in an automobile accident, so we came back to our roots. And so I kind of sat up there. This is kind of the funny part. I used to sit in the balcony, the first row balcony, and I'd look out at all those older folks right there that were down below me, and I'd keep thinking, now this was the era, right, where the steel industry was crashing? And I keep thinking, you know, for a young guy like me, what would all you folks that I'm looking at the back of your heads tell me about why you sit here on Sunday doing what you do, and then on Monday through Friday, all blank, you know, gets loose in the steel industry, you know, and which was such a primary industry in Pittsburgh. I never could get that straight in my mind. It was just always something that bothered me quite a bit. But it's, nonetheless, there was a strength and commitment to this church that I developed in that period of time that I was here. Well, I graduated from St. Clair and went to college, and then went into the service. And in the Air Force, took me to Denver, Colorado, and then to North Carolina, where I served in the Air Force. And then when I decided to come back out of the Air Force, what happens? But Peck gets recruited by Westinghouse to come back to Pittsburgh and negotiate naval nuclear contracts for Rickover's Navy. So here I am back in Pittsburgh. I'm thinking, well, okay, I'll negotiate these contracts. But that led to the practice of law and everything. And the thing was that now I've come back to the First Church in Murraysville, and then came from there to Thomas Church, and then back to Westminster. And in that period of time, I watched Westminster. I was always able to stay and keep my focus a little bit on Westminster because my mother was here, and she was kind of like the anchor in the family. Everybody came back to Jean and the whole thing. But what I noticed was there was a period of unease that occurred. You know, it was like, yeah, everything's going really good, but, and then you can end that sentence any way you want to, in that kind of a situation. Well, what's happened now, and what I'm so happy to be able to say to these folks that are down there, is right now all is good, all is well at Westminster. Now, I don't think that that's a reason at all to, the minute something's well, then you better start watching for what's not, you know, and to keep things going forward correctly. But Westminster is in this amazing position right now, and it's being so ably directed, and all of us seem to be on the same page for the first time in a long time. And it's across the generations. Not only just male, female, across the generations, age. It's all, you know, working well. And so I think it's great right now at Westminster. Things are good. It means we have to pay attention to what's going on and make sure it stays good. So, well, thank you very much for your time. I've really appreciated it.